Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country and the official podcast for the New York, California, and Florida restaurant shows, the Pizza Tomorrow Summit, and the U.S. Culinary Open at NAFM. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive and I get to eat it. Email us to learn more, info@thewalkandtalk.com. Today's guest is somebody who's not only made history, but continues to shape the future of the culinary world. Chef Fiona España is the first female president at the LA chapter of the American Culinary Federation in over 100 years. A proud Latina, a passionate executive chef, and a mentor to many, her journey from student to national leader is nothing short of inspiring. She's navigated the complexities of a traditionally male-dominated industry with resilience and purpose, turning challenges into stepping stones and opening doors for others along the way. Fiona's awesome. She's been a supporter of this show since literally the beginning. With a food festival on the horizon this October and a deep commitment to mentoring the next generation, Fiona's story is one of growth, impact, and determination. Also in studio, we welcome back the chef Thomas Parker. Oh man, he cooked up three elevated stunners today, and we still have some more to do after this. Wow. Okay, let's get into this. All right, Thomas. John said it before. If there's an A game, you brought it, but more. It's a, and then some. It's like A plus game, I guess. Today was fantastic.
I appreciate it, man. Like, getting compliments from people that are in the industry and that know the industry, like, that's what really goes to our hearts as chefs.
The photography of this, what you did today, is some of the best. And I hate to say that like that, because everyone who we bring in, losers don't make it in and the winners stay. And at the end of the day, the dishes that are getting put out are stupid. Let's talk about them. What's your favorite dish today?
That's hard. Like, I have so much love for all three of them that I did. I'm going to go with the steak though. The filet.
Talk about it.
Solely because that's the one I'm going to use it on a menu here in the near future. So it's a mojo crusted carne asada filet. It's got a black bean and corn salsa on it, a chipotle infused demi-glace. I did 3 different types of fluid gels for the plate as garnish. There was a pickled onion, a sour cream, and a cilantro. And then we flash fried some cornstarch shallot rings to garnish it with and give it a little bit of microgreen, and it was just beautiful.
Not bad for a piece of choice meat, right?
Yeah, a piece of choice meat. It was grade 8 to 9 Wagyu.
Okay, that's what I was waiting for you to say. All right, excellent. Not bad. You know, it was butter. It was butter. The whole thing, like you take a spoonful and you make sure each of those, you know, parts of the dish are on the spoon or fork, whatever. And you just take that whole bite and it just, that Wagyu, it all just melted. Everything melted and everything had a layer and you had the flavor profile of everything. And whatever the crust was that you, with the citrus in it, talk about that real quick, man, because that was really great.
Yeah. So, I've done 3 or 4 different versions of that crust. You know, I've done a coffee one. This one's I call it a mojo crust because it has lemon, lime, orange zest in it, garlic, salt, pepper, just your normal stuff. But the thing that really makes it is I add cornstarch to it. And when you pan sear it, it just gives you such a hard, luscious crust that just cracks as you put a knife through it. And it helps it stick to the steak.
It was zingy. I don't know if that's a word or whatever, but it had zing. It was tangy. It was really great, man. Okay, so not to overshadow the other dishes, what else did you cook?
So Aussie Select has this incredible product. It's a lamb ham, and they do different versions of it. And I really wanted to showcase it. So I did it's a playoff of the American version of country fried steak, only I did some Indian fusion with it. So I called it country fried korma. So korma is one of the traditional curry dishes. So I breaded the ham steak in almonds and pan fried it. We paired it with, instead of just using rice, like in a traditional curry dish, I did congee, which is, you know, you blend the rice grain down and it's their version of grits, really. And instead of just using cream, I used curry to make it. And then we added a layered potato that I baked and then fried off and topped it with a sauteed sausage that we made a tikka masala puree to cook it in.
I don't even know what to say. I mean, today I felt like, and I would never do it. Not in front of you guys anyway, but I felt like I should have a tear. I should have had a tear today. It was that good.
There was even more to it, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, because I wanted to individualize every ingredient for curry. So like there was a carrot element. I did the little carrot tuli cookies. I made mint oil, which we floated on top of the curry.
There's a lot of work that went into this.
Yeah. Well,
I feel like this is probably your most in-depth, you know, time with us in terms of your, you know, and what you did for ingredients and cooking prep and all that.
Yeah, I think so. But I, you know, when you find passion in a dish, like you, it doesn't matter how much work goes into it. In the end, you want it to be perfect. Chefs were perfectionists at fault. So like, in my mind, when I'm creating a dish, it has to be perfect. When I'm teaching and mentoring my staff, like, it has to be perfect. They have to get it the same way that I'm going to get it.
What was the other dish?
The other dish, little funny play. As you know, I just had another daughter, and I was reading my older daughter, Green Eggs and Ham. So I did a little play off of a French croque madame, and I called it Green Eggs and Lamb Madame.
So, I mean, I have 2 young ones. One's a daughter. I just appreciate this a lot. Get into what that's about. That was Aussie Select also, correct?
Yeah. That was the agave rosemary Aussie Select. And unlike the first dish, which was a ham steak, essentially, I shaved this one. We just pretty much let it cook in some butter, get a nice crust on it, and yeah, it was a croque madame. I make this really good rosemary and confit garlic focaccia at the restaurant. So we just buttered and grilled a piece of that and topped it with the lamb ham. Then added a black bean and corn Gruyere Mornay to it. So cheese sauce. And Then I wanted to get a little weird sciencey with it. So I went into my molecular gastronomy book and I turned bacon into powder. I made tomato water caviar and I did some reverse spherification on a puree of avocado, and that became the green egg.
People, I need you to understand something. Today was really, really cool for us. Thomas brought it, and this avocado egg, it's basically, it looks like egg yolk is what it looks like. Well, it's actually in the shape of an egg, hard boiled egg, but the consistency, you pop this thing, it's green. And it looks like green egg yolk. It was with tequila, right?
Yeah. So I, you know, when you do something like the agar caviar or reverse spherification, it needs a liquid to set in. And whatever that liquid is, it kind of, it absorbs it a little bit and it takes on that flavor profile. So instead of just water or lime juice or anything, what I soaked it in was mezcal tequila.
Yeah. Clearly stupid, stupidly awesome. I can't give you enough pats on the back. We have one more shoot to do after the podcast. And real quick, just tell everybody what it is.
It's a playoff of Prohibition cocktail called the Gold Rush, which is normally bourbon, lemon, and honey syrup. But in using the mezcal tequila for the second dish I did, I wanted to change up the bourbon. So we're going to do mezcal tequila, fresh lemon, and agave syrup instead of the honey syrup.
And we are going to use the Supercut Systems lemon slicer to make this drink. All right. Without further ado, let's welcome Chef Fiona to the program. How are you, Chef?
Oh, I'm in a dream right here just thinking of all this food.
Seriously, you're sitting there, you're listening, and you're thinking to yourself, I should have been in studio today. That's what it should be.
Yes.
Am I wrong?
Yes, yeah. I should have flew in.
just
for this meal.
Well, listen, I think I mentioned this on our pregame call. We'll get you here, so don't worry. I do want to make that happen. You're kind of a big deal, Fiona. You know, we've never met in person, but we've known each other now for two and a half years. And you've been just a terrific supporter of Walk and Talk podcast and what we're doing. And I just sincerely thank you for that. And, you know, we've been talking for a long time on how, you know, just to get you on the show. I mean, I feel like you deserve it. And I think your story is pretty, pretty incredible. Can you explain the feeling of being the first female chapter president in your area for 100 years? What does that mean to you?
Well, I think the first couple of years, because this is my fourth year, my second term, it didn't really hit me because I knew I had a lot of work to do to kind of just get the paperwork done as a nonprofit organization, bank accounts, bylaw changes. So it wasn't really time to just sit there and think, wow, this is great. I'm so happy. That I don't know. It was more work, like put the gloves on, let's get down and dirty and make sure that this everything's set up the right way. And just kind of continue to make sure that the foundation is reset to where we can just hand it off to the next person on the next term or the next board of directors. So I think about year three, this last year four, is where it finally hit me. And I realized that it's just the beginning of so many great things that I can accomplish. And it's kind of humbling because there's so many great chefs out there and they chose me. Now I'm using it as much as I can to be a part of like the culinary competitions for the colleges locally. We have, I believe it's about 4 here in LA, really big culinary schools. We have tons of high school programs that are all throughout LA region, San Bernardino region, which is about 30, 40 minutes from us. So I try to tap into both counties because I'm right in the middle and they use me, but I like it. So I'm just kind of going with the flow now and trying to take it one event at a time.
Well, take us back to the beginning. What first got you into culinary and has that passion, and has it grown since you started? And was that about Oh, that was over 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You know, you say 20 plus years to the food life, you know, to the restaurant life, and the sound of your voice, the texture of your voice on that sigh tells it all. But go ahead and explain, please.
I feel like Rose from Titanic when you say that. 20 plus years. I know, I was like 12 when I started. I mean, not literally, well, but
of course.
You know what? I started as a server at Olive Garden back in 2000. I liked it. Quick money, fast pace. You meet a lot of people. I'm a social butterfly. So it was really easy for me. And then I ended up dropping out of college. I wanted to be a math teacher, math professor. So my major was mathematics. But I got married, I got pregnant, had some kids, had a family. And then my mom said, you know, you should go back to school, you should get an education. So I said, you know, if I'm going to go back to school, it's going to be for something that I love to do, which is bake. I love to bake. I love to do desserts, pastries. And she told me that I should get a degree. Don't just get a certificate, because in the long run, the education is where it's going to be at. I didn't see what was really in the future, or I didn't really have anything in mind except for, oh, I just want to be the best pastry chef in the world, which I'm not there yet, but one day. And I went to culinary school. I went to Le Cordon Bleu, and I did the whole program. I loved it. I had a great time. And the journey from there was more than what I really expected. I thought I was just going to play with sugar and flour and fabricate some meats and, you know, just be a happy little cook in the kitchen my whole life. But it didn't turn out that way. I'm a little more than a cook now.
Well, you realize somewhere along the way that if you wanted to really go somewhere, listen, pastry chefs, we've had plenty of pastry chefs on the show, and everyone has the same feeling. And it's basically pastry chefs don't get any love, and you can only get so high as a pastry chef. And
correct.
Right. So you saw that and you decided that, hey, I'm going to hit savory and I'm just going to be a badass. I'm pretty sure that's how it went down. Right.
Yeah, that was the goal. I just said, let me just be a badass, and I figured it out.
Fiona, as a Latina in a male-dominated industry, what were some of the earliest challenges that you encountered, and how did you manage to navigate them?
I didn't realize that it was a male-dominant industry. I thought women belonged in the kitchen until when I got like my first job, and you don't see a lot of women, or they're in garmanger, they're in the salad station. And then on the hotline, you don't see a lot of women. And I wondered why, like, what's the difference? And I realized really, really fast that you have to put in your dues, right? You got to pay your dues. The unfortunate part of what I learned was that the ridicule of not speaking Spanish was like a constant. It was the older Hispanic women that didn't like that I didn't speak Spanish. My mom doesn't speak Spanish, and my dad didn't speak to me in Spanish. So I'm Californian. That was kind of like the thing I would tell them, because they would say, you're not Mexican. And I didn't understand what that meant. And I said, well, my grandparents are from Mexico. Like, how does that not make me Mexican? But they were referring to speaking the language and really carrying yourself with the culture. So that was kind of like the hard part. So I try to stay away from, I wouldn't say women, but the older generation that kind of just, you know, pushed me aside. And I just went with those that kind of embraced me and would continue to show me like the lines and how to do certain things. And it was hard because it was like one way or another. At one point I had one chef tell me, just stay at home. You have too many kids. You're not going to be a real chef. Like you're not going to go that far. And I was kind of taken back because I was, I don't know, maybe like 3-4 years into being a cook. And I loved what I did. I did pay my dues. I did work 14-hour shifts, 16-hour shifts on the line, prepping banquets. I always tried to do the most, even as a cook. It kind of motivated me to set some goals of being an executive chef before 40 years old. I met my goal when I was 38, which was kind of like, cool, I got the title. This is exciting. And then I realized this is a lot of work. Opening up kitchens and opening up the buildings. It was a lot of work. And I've from then, from 38 years old, I've opened 4 kitchens. It's been a good journey. I just evolved over the years of really getting that ridicule kind of pushed me to continue to like set higher goals and not really let them keep me bitter. And I understand where they're coming from now. So I kind of try to not let that hinder me from like, oh, these people will never like me. It's not that they don't like me. They just, you know, see me as either a threat. I don't know. But I didn't want to take their jobs. I didn't want to be a garmanger lady at 80 years old. That wasn't my goal. They could keep that job. That's fine. But the negativity definitely fueled me to do more. I never wanted to prove like people wrong. I just wanted to know that I can do it, even though they told me, you're not going to make it. You're a mom. You need to stay at home. You're not going to be a chef. There's not a lot of female chefs. It's just not going to happen. And then here I am. I'm more than what I actually expected. So
in your quiet time, do you sit there ever and say to yourself, you know what? I did do it. And in spite of speed bumps and negative people, I'm achieving, and you're still achieving, and you're still growing. Do you ever just sit there and think about that?
Yeah. I think it's usually after, you know, like some really big events that I've done. The most recent is the LA fires, which was back in January. I made some phone calls. I reached out to a lot of our vendors, a lot of our chefs in our chapter. I said, hey, let's get these people fed. Let's give them water bottles, whatever we can do, make some little care packages. Let's send it out to them. The firefighters, first responders, let's just go. I'm going to use my power, whatever little power I have or whatever big power I have, I'm going to use it. And within 1 week, we were able to get over $20,000 in donations, 4 pallets of water, and all distributed throughout all the fire areas. And I think 2 days after, like, everything was kind of settled with being able to, like, push it all out. I'm not a big crier, but I literally was, like, in tears of, like, I can't believe I did this. Like, I used my powers for good. And I was taken back, but it took a lot of energy out of me to just, you know, kind of stay positive, you know, cook for veterans. I cooked for five days, 3 meals. I probably cooked maybe 6 of those meals for 200 veterans that were displaced. So it was hard physically, but mentally it's very fulfilling. It's very like, it gives you so much, like with your skill, your craft, you know, you can be able to give and do so much that you never realize how much you can really do when you push yourself. And I think at that moment is where I said, this is an amazing feeling and I want to do it again. I mean, I don't hope there's natural disasters, but it's just, you get in there, you do it, and you do the most. One of the big helpers that really pushed me to like continue doing it was Amy Sins. I think she's out of New Orleans. Uh-huh. She's a great individual. I mean, I text her and I said, help me. walk me through this process of helping people. And she did. She was phenomenal. Just that encouragement, those just the words, a couple of connections. And we got so much done in like 2 weeks. So it was so fulfilling in my career to say that I was able to assist or even just pull these things together. There's been a few other events that are really where you sit back and think, wow, I didn't even think I could do this. This is not really like chef stuff, I guess. You know, it's just being able, it's the community, you know, being able to give back in your skill and your craft. On a day-to-day, I think I'm just a regular chef. I cook, I do banquets, you know, I do my daily operations, I reinvent my menu. And then there's times where I say, hey, it's, you know, do the most. So I have my moments, but it has to be in an extreme event for me to really say, like, pat on the back to myself, because I just feel like I'm not doing enough for this industry, because I feel like it's just a scratch. You know, $20,000 is nothing compared to what the fires had did to so many homes.
Amy Sins, she's a friend of the show. She's a terrific lady in and of herself. I don't know if you knew or saw, but she had a TED Talk a few weeks back. I'm so proud of what she's doing. Like, she's an amazing human being also. Yeah. And we were fortunate to have her on the show a couple of times. And, you know, she's even done some last year at the Boku store in New Orleans. She was doing some mic work for us. You know, she was a correspondent for Walk and Talk, and she represented. And she's,
oh, that's right.
Yeah, she's just such a sweet person who has a backbone. This like a, I don't know what that would be, like just a massive backbone. She's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to mention something. I don't want to say that. I want to mention something. You said earlier that you ran into some challenges with family speaking Spanish and what the expectations were, and that you're not actually Mexican. I didn't realize that other cultures had that, because it's the same with me. All my family, both sides going all the way back, they're from basically the same region in Italy. I just never learned Italian. Growing up, I understood the dialect, but I didn't speak proper Italian, and I didn't really speak the dialect either. I just kind of understood it. And going forward, as me at my age now, like, I don't even try. My wife is Cuban. They speak Spanish, and I don't even try to learn any language at this point. But I will tell you that people from over there in Italy, they look at me and they're like, well, you're not even Italian. And I'm like, my blood is probably purer than yours. And at the end of the day, they still look down on you. And, you know, I've had this conversation with many a person. And at the end of the day, it's like really exhausting. I really identify with what you said there.
The starting point of my journey of taking that first job at a university, there's, I don't know, 500 cooks. There's an extreme amount of workers. Again, I thought I was just, you know, chugging along on the choo-choo train, like, yay, let's all cook. And then I didn't realize that you're not, like, why ridicule your partner or your coworkers, what I identify as? Like, I'm Mexican-American. I apologize for not speaking Spanish, you know? Like, it's wild. It really is. And then I realized, well, they come from a different country, so they're gonna say that's not our standard. But that's why I've told so many people I'm Californian. What does that mean? Like, I was born and raised here. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know how else to explain it.
I say I'm I'm American Italian because I was born here in the States. I was born in Florida. I'm born in Miami. I'm American Italian, and that's what I am. Fiona, marketing campaigns, leadership roles, festivals. How are you keeping your identity as a chef and managing all this?
I drink a lot of espresso. I drink 4 shots a day to get me going. And then I think about what's happening. First, I'm a mom. I have four kids. I've been married almost 23 years. I have two dogs and I run a household. And then I think what kind of just fuels me in general is being able to do so many things. And there's so many times I've heard you should hone in on your craft, right? But what is my craft? My craft looks like being a chef. My craft is doing pastries. My craft is being a mom. I really enjoy those multiple tasks. And it kind of develops me as a leader to say, okay, this is how we do it, or this is how I do it. One of my mentors, I was kind of overwhelmed one time. And I mean, I'm overwhelmed all the time. But this one time, I asked my mentor, I said, how do you do it? Right? You're a dad, you have a family, you run, you know, a pretty large hospital property. You travel for the ACF. You're one of the leads, one of the national officers. There's just so many things that you're doing. Like, how do you make time for your family? Or how do you prioritize this? Like, what's more important? It's like, first of all, I'm a dad. You go to every single event. Doesn't matter what's happening. Go to their events. Make time for your kids. And then everything else will follow through. And I said, okay, I'll do that. I think because I kept saying, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. And I loved it, but I wasn't, you know, making time for my kids in the sense of like, oh, I got to make sure that these practices come first, or, oh, I'm taking them here, or going to the school events, or missing them, or getting there late. So once I started saying, okay, my kids scheduling, my four kids, this one has softball, this one has a boxing, this one needs time alone with me, this one will come along for the ride, okay, and make sure each individual child has their own time. And then I kind of would fit in everything else. So I don't sleep much, and I just continue to go, because that's just what kind of fuels me of being able to do so many different things and keep going, you know, set the goals. And if I don't meet them, you just keep going for that goal and set something else.
You've mentioned the Old Boys Club regarding culinary leadership. Obviously, it's a thing. It exists.
This is kind of like what I live for. If you can't beat them, join them. When someone says, don't look at that, that's what you're looking at.
Don't push the red button. Pushing the red button.
And I push the red button, or I'm going to touch the red button. In seeing this, I said, the ACF as a whole, you know, it provides education, certification, competition. But what, like, where's the benefit in it, right? And everyone always asks that, how is it going to help you? Okay. But the point for me was, like, I didn't look like them, but I wanted to know what made them successful. Why do they continue to be a part of the ACF? Why do they, you know, pay the dues? Like, what's the purpose of it? So I wanted to say, I'm a part of it because I don't fit in. Like, I'm not the norm. I'm red hair. Red hair and brown skin, I guess, right? I'm not the normal chef, right? I'm a female too. So it was really more for when people say you can't do it, I try to do it. Not fitting in, but I also wanted, again, using it to my advantage, I wanted to see how are they becoming the directors of the food and beverage department? How are they becoming national leaders and just bigger titles? Like, what are they doing? Because I want to do that too. I never want to settle for just, I'm just a cook. I'm just a chef. For some people that works, but for me, it doesn't. And I'm using it to my advantage to really like push me to learn from them, whether they teach me or I just hear in and listen and, you know, having that confidence, even though they're not that great at, I don't know, maybe they can't do the science part of being a chef, right? The molecular gastronomy, like all those cool things, and some can, which I find it very amazing, but I just want to see, how do they do it? Is it a social game that I need to learn? Is it cooking very well, or is it a combination of things? So I've used it as a tool to kind of gain, not really status, but just, I want to be able to develop as a leader. I want to be able to continue to grow in this industry. But if I don't learn from those that kind of have made it or are already there, then who am I going to learn from? I mean, I'll still fail. I still failed in doing a lot of things and probably said the wrong stuff, but I'm learning. I'm learning because it's funny that, like, I just had to let people go. I just had to let someone go this week, and I had to sit back and think, okay, how am I going to do it legally? You know, I'm not just going to go off my feelings and say, you know what, this person, and I can't take this anymore. They're getting on my nerves. Like, but they work very well. Like, if they're great workers, well, I got to keep them. I can't do anything personally. It's only through business. So how do you do that? You got to learn how to develop great leaders. So you need to do it yourself. So shifting the system to my advantage is kind of just what I've been doing the last like 5 to 8 years, and being a part of something that maybe I don't look like them, but I'm going to squeeze in there and sit right next to them and take notes, because I want to be, you know, a national director for maybe a corporation or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Fiona, this is Chef Thomas. I just want to second that with you. I definitely agree. You've got to be able to play all sides of the ball game and the political game, the real business aspect of it. I wanted to chime in just because I'm dealing with the same thing right now in my kitchen. I have my dinner crews. They're absolutely phenomenal. They're great cooks, but every day, every single one of them's 10, 15 minutes late, you know, and we make the schedule. We want them there on the line, ready to work at that scheduled time. And I finally had enough, and I started holding them accountable. And, you know, it doesn't matter how good they are. Sometimes you just got to put your foot down and really stick to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's tough because we've built a lot of good relationships. And personally, we might be really good friends, but on the business side, sorry, nothing personal. It's business. We got to keep it rolling.
Absolutely.
Fiona, looking ahead, what legacy do you hope to leave behind in this industry of ours?
I definitely want the next generation to have a good foundation of taking time for themselves, balancing their work-life schedule, but also having a good work ethic. And that's been kind of like a struggle with some of the college students that are in culinary school. For me, not really convincing, but I want to be able to show them how I've done it and then continue to give back and say, okay, we make mistakes and just keep going. We'll make less mistakes, fewer mistakes, and just keep going stronger and build off of that. So leaving something behind would definitely be like the knowledge, kind of just paving the road so that they know that there's a place for them. You know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel or create your own table. I just squeeze in the table, like scoot over, shove a bun because I'm coming in. Doesn't matter. And I want people to know that it's okay, because you're going to get pushed around anyways. So be happy with what you do and enjoy your career. Doesn't matter what it is, but there always be those that, you know, kind of will bring you down, but they're bringing you down to a different level and you're going up. They're not going up with you. So I just want to just keep it more positive, regardless of the status, the culture, that they can do it. You know, I wouldn't say anyone can do it because physically this is freaking hard, but you can do it. You can do it. Definitely. You can do it.
And as time goes on, it gets harder to do it and put in those hours.
Right. I just think that it's a smarter way. Like, how do you work smarter and not physically harder?
Well, you know, it's even more than that. I remember when I was a kid, my father says, he says, go ahead, stand up on the table, get up on the table. I was like, no, what do you want from me? Pops, like, what do you get up on the table? So I hop up on the table. So I'm now obviously, you know, half a human taller than my father. I'm standing on the table and he puts his hand out and he says, grab my hand. I said, okay. And you know, he says, now pull me up. I'm like, I don't have the leverage. I can't pull you up. But it was so easy for him to pull me down. And he said, this is a lesson. He goes, you know, who you are with is going to determine how you go forward, because it's easier for somebody to pull you down than it is for you to pull them up. So be very selective in who you're trying to help in your life. And I thought that, you know, I still remember that. And I think it fits when you're in leadership, because as we get older and we offer knowledge through our experiences to somebody who's younger, not everybody is ready to receive it. And you really gotta be selective, because the older you get, the energy you have to give is just less. And when you get, when you select someone to mentor and they kind of stick it to you a little bit, you don't really recover as well. And therefore you don't want to really mentor the next time when it's a good opportunity.
Right. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, mentoring is one of my favorite aspects, if not the favorite aspect of my position. And 90% of the people that you have come through your kitchens nowadays, it's just a paycheck, you know. They don't want to put in the care, the passion, the effort. They take shortcuts. You know, you spend so much time teaching them how to execute a dish perfectly. And like I said, we're perfectionists. So when we see something not going out, like, it pisses me off. And finding that person that will do that, you have to recognize it and put the mentorship into them.
Thomas, well said. Fiona, what is the message for the next generation of chefs?
I think that we need to have empathy. Keep encouraging them. We are here to be supportive, but also have a good work ethic. Hard work is good. It's never a bad thing. You got to pay your dues, and you too can be successful. Make sure you drink your water. Stay hydrated. When you're on that line, we don't want you to die.
Yeah. Don't die on the line, people. Do not die. Don't die on the line. Oh, wow. Fiona, how do people find you? What's your socials?
Betty Clocker on Instagram. Betty_Clocker. That's where I'm at.
You are a badass, Betty Clocker. I just want you to know that. Thomas Parker, what's your socials?
Chef_Thomas Parker on Instagram.
People out there, do not forget to follow the John Hernandez, photographer extraordinaire at Ibis Images. This guy's changing the game. Another badass. I'm just saying. He doesn't deserve to hear this from me. He does a little bit. All right. Listen, Fiona, I sincerely appreciate you very much. Thank you for coming on the show. Parker.
Thank you.
You are an animal too. John, love you, baby. We are out. We'll be right back.
and get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple: develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.